Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Hope everyone is well, safe, sane, and of course, masked. This week, we talk with Stacey Allister. Stacey is the chief executive for professional tennis at the USTA. She is also the tournament director for the US Open. And in this conversation, it's basically FAQ. We sort of go through some of the issues pertaining mostly to protocol and policy about COVID, but we also talk about the social justice messaging that is now permitted on players' attire. This, of course, is a US Open-like no other. A lot of improvising, a lot of scrambling. We did not think on January 1st that we were going to have the entire field basically getting tested at a Marriott every morning. So anyway, a U.S. Open like no other. But as of now, as we record this on Wednesday, the show is going on, first with the Cincinnati event and then staying in the bubble, the 2020 U.S. Open. So we talked with Stacey about what this event is going to look like, what she anticipates, what the testing protocol is going to be, and how to maximize health and safety as we go forward with our second major of the year. So in keeping with this crazy abnormal year, we did this on Zoom. Stacey was wearing a mask and looked to be in the women's locker room at the National Tennis Center. And in full disclosure, I had to pull over to the side of the road. There were cement trucks behind me, just like the event in Lexington. So if you're wondering about the connection, that's the answer. But here's a good conversation, sort of projecting the 2020 U.S. Open. Here is Stacey Allister.
This is not the conventional pre-tournament call you're probably used to.
Every day is a new day with new experiences.
Yeah, I was thinking usually we talk about wild cards and we talk about innovations, and you and I disagree about coaching. We're in a little bit different
place. Yeah, we don't have to talk about coaching. How about that?
Exactly. So I thought we would just sort of rip through some Q&A, and just I think a lot of this is probably some of this is out there, and some of this the players are aware of, and some of them this might be news to. But I've been getting a lot of emails, and I suspect you have too. And I thought we could just use this time to get a bit of a lay of the land, if that's okay.
That'd be great, John. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to do it.
No, I think, we've been talking about this U.S. Open for months and months. And now
6 months.
Is that what it is?
Well, really, it flew in March, right? When the global sport shut down. Indian Wells, what's going to happen?
Here we are. We should time
it. It's
yeah,
it really is. I don't know how to explain it. But right now we are in the moment. It's day five of the bubble, the official bubble. So, it's really happening. And for so long, we just didn't know if it was happening.
And give us a sense. We're 5 days in. I'll timestamp this. It's August 19th. And you said about 90% of the players have arrived already.
Correct. And that was the design of the centralized environment and the decision, one of the decisions to why to move Western Southern Open to New York. Give the athletes that pre-competitive opportunity before a Grand Slam because they haven't had that opportunity. So, and the singles in Western Southern and then an expanded qualifying, almost getting your full complement. We're not 100% there. Right. And you've got the athletes have got to be in 4 days before their first competition, and many of them have come early, which is great, so that they begin to get into this, bubble world and isolation.
Before I ask you about the testing, I got the I saw an email about the social justice apparel and this exception. Tell me a little bit more about that, and where did that decision? What inspired that decision, beside the obvious?
I think it's a combination of it's obviously a very significant and important issue in our country, and as Adam Silver said, we can't ignore it, and the USTA is not going to ignore it. And then we started to see athletes wanting to express themselves around social causes, and we got a sneak peek of that World Team Tennis. And so we were proactive, and we went to both tours and said, how are you going to manage it for your events? And then, as you know, it's not permitted within the Grand Slam rulebook. So we then worked with the Grand Slam chairman and the two tours to come up with a 2020 exemption to the rulebook that would allow athletes at their choice to express themselves with, the classical, 3-inch on either a patch on the shirt or something on the shoe. And so it's available to them if they would like to do that. And if they could also, wear a jersey or a t-shirt during the warm-up. So there's some flexibility of application.
Have you seen any application so far?
I have only seen, it's unofficial, one athlete who I know who wants to do something on their shoe. But I haven't seen anything official yet.
Gotcha. And were there, in Lexington, there was a Black Lives Matter placard on the signage. Will there be
yes.
on the court?
There will be a number of different signage elements around Arthur Ashe Stadium. And are we doing it also on Louis? The scrim? I'm not sure. Anyway, on Arthur Ashe. And that'll range from social justice causes, tributes to first responders and everyone here in New York. Get out and play, original nine. So we're definitely going to have a special open, and have many elements to it.
And let's get to the testing. But I do want to ask: will there be sort of traditional signage and the usual sponsorship that we have in years past?
There will be, the traditional signage. We will not have LED back walls like we did last year. Mm-hmm. And we, similar to what we've seen with the other professional sports, there'll be a scrim for the lower bowl.
Right.
And then there will be LED boards around the bowl to then have our fans who are watching online or on air be able to be part of the show.
So this is sort of no cardboard cutouts, but.
Cardboard cutouts, yeah. No cardboard cutouts, but everything's been looked at. Did you see the robotic drummers in Japan in the Japanese baseball?
My favorite. I saw those. I saw the Korean baseball. My favorite was the weekend at Bernie's guys. But I feel like we need Mayor Dinkins and Bill Ackman and the usual cast of characters we need as cutouts.
Yeah, we talked about that. We really did, and. But at the end of the day, we've decided no cardboard cutouts.
So let's talk about the testing situation. The players arrived, past tense, and what happened already?
Sure. So as soon as the players arrived, they essentially went right to the medical testing center. And it took about 15 minutes, 20 minutes for their first one, just doing some paperwork and administrative. The actual administration of the test is very, very quick. The test that we're using is a gold standard PCR, and it's called the PCR anterior nares. And the way for us all to understand that, it's the one that goes midway up the nasal. It doesn't go all the way up the nasal pharyngeal. We have the benefit of now a lot of research on the accuracy of the anterior nares, and the doctors are comfortable. It's producing similar accuracy results as the nasal pharyngeal, and it's just a lot more comfortable, especially when the athletes and myself, any of us working in tier one, and we're tested frequently. So that first test happens, and then basically they got a wristband, which means they're in isolation, and they were escorted to their rooms, and they were in their isolation until they received an alert that they had a negative result. During that time, to give your listeners what was it like and what was the experience. Right. So day one, we had 300 people check into the hotel on Saturday, August 15th, as players and their guests. I'd say there was probably 150 Uber Eats orders. And those just kept coming. They weren't permitted to come down and get them. So we had staff who were running things up. And Chipotle and Cheesecake Factory were the number one and number two favorites.
athletes love their Cheesecake Factory. I think I saw Uber Eats did more business than conventional Uber last quarter. So that doesn't...
So
just to be clear, the testing was at the hotel, right? Is that correct?
Correct. All of the testing is at the official player hotel. That's where all the medical services are, physio, etc. We do now have a satellite lab here at the National Tennis Center in the Arthur Ashe area. And that is really meant for the afternoon and those late night matches so that we can do testing. But the primary one is at the hotel, and everyone had to go to the Long Island Marriott for their first one.
Even the players who chose private housing?
Correct. So everyone. They've all been through it.
Were there antibody tests as well?
That was offered. It was not mandatory. And, I think the doctors were pleasantly surprised that a lot of athletes took up the offer. So
what did you do about the players who tested? You know, their names are out there, but we can, the players who tested positive this summer.
Sure.
How were they handled?
So they must bring copies of their positive and recent PCR tests. Some of them sent them in advance. Some of them just brought them. And then our infectious disease specialist, Dr. Kamens, he's right on the floor. And he's meeting with the athletes. Some of those calls also are happening in advance of the athletes arriving. And the protocol is essentially with per New York City Department of Health, a previous positive test, everyone gets one from a baseline, but thereafter they will not need to submit to a PCR test. So an athlete who's previously tested positive, their results have been confirmed by our medical team. Right. They submit to one, and then they do not have to further take the PCR test.
And after that initial test, how often are the players going to be tested now?
So the cycle is the first two within 48 hours. Okay. Then after the 48-hour period, every 4 days. And that is the same for everyone.
And if a player tested positive today or this week, in theory, could they quarantine and still play in the U.S. Open?
So I know it's confusing for people, that as I've learned a little bit about COVID. If you're infected, the CDC guidelines, and also for New York State, you have to isolation for a minimum of 10 days.
So
then the answer to your question is, yes, it's possible. It's based on their symptoms. They have to be fever-free for a minimum of 24 hours without any medication. And the doctors, John, will just have to make an assessment per the CDC treatment guidelines. But it would be possible.
Obviously,
for the player who is tested positive.
Right, right. I mean, obviously, in a few days, that's going to be a moot point. If a player tests positive during the event, we all know about the false positive rate. Do they have a chance to play a let, so to speak? I mean, do they have a chance to get a second test and try and...
No. So, again, a positive is a positive. The standard of our test is highly accurate. There is the possibility, but it's very rare. and the government won't allow us. It's an automatic isolation. A positive test goes into the contact tracing. They will need to isolate.
Which means withdrawal from the tournament.
Then they would be withdrawn from the tournament, correct.
No, hey, can I come back in half an hour and try that again?
No, fine. No, we can't. We can't. And I think the overarching protocol, mitigation of risk, and we are not going to take any risks. We just can't.
Right.
This virus, it's the secret spreader, the silent spreader. And if we have a known positive test, and the government takes this lens as well, view, it's positive, isolation.
Right. What if my coach tests positive, but I'm negative?
Yes. So in that situation, really, it will be up to the New York City Department of Health, because they take over. A positive test, then it is handed to the government to determine, were they practicing social distancing? Were they wearing their masks? What was the period of time that they might have been exposed to that coach? And so there's a lot of variables that then go into that equation. And ultimately, they will decide. And in addition, our medical team in that event will also have to weigh in around the risk factor, especially if the contact tracing is taking too long. So again, we can't take any risk. It's really quite amazing to have at the moment, 1,400-ish PCR tests completed. And at the moment, one positive result. So we're going to do everything we can to continue that trend and keep everyone safe.
There's not a bubble, which I think is the root of the problem, but we've seen some colleges and universities that have opened and then abruptly shut because of this high incidence. Is there a threshold number where if the U.S. Open has X tests, sorry, that the show can't go on? I mean, is there some sort of worst case scenario, obviously, but is there some threshold number? And if you hit that, you just can't have an event?
Mm-hmm. There's no defined threshold number. Again, it will be up to the New York City Department of Health for them to make that determination. And even if the city was still comfortable and the state with us proceeding, I also know that our USTA Medical Advisory Group and our board, we might determine ourselves that we don't want to proceed. So, I think you've heard one of the fundamental principles, mitigation of risk, and we're not going to do this at all costs. And we'll continue to be, that'll be the lens, but ultimately city and state, we'd collaborate with them, and we're not gonna, take those types of chances if it's at a point that everyone gets uncomfortable.
And what's the punishment? What's the penalty for breaching the bubble?
So again, it's severe. If you leave the bubble and you have, potentially exposed yourself to others who are outside of the bubble, you'll be removed from the tournaments. We cannot, again, take that risk. We know that it can take an average of 5 days for the virus to incubate, and we can't have somebody that decided to go to Starbucks or go to a bar and they come back in. It's just, we're not going to put other people's lives at risk because we had someone that has decided to leave the bubble.
One of your colleagues had suggested a few weeks ago to me, but it was all just in a casual conversation, that maybe there was even some sort of disqualification from 2021, that anyone that breached the bubble wouldn't be eligible. Where did you come down on that?
So, you've got two categories of tier one guests. You have the player, and then you have their permitted guests. So whether that be coach, trainer, mom, dad, etc. So for the guest, they, they're removed from the bubble. They've got 24 hours to get a flight. They've got to stay in their room until they're leaving. They can't mix with people. And there will be a financial penalty and obviously the player is responsible for their guests.
Right.
And then lastly, for the guest, they will not be given a credential to the 2021 U.S. Open. So that's just for the guests. The player, you know, being pulled out of the competition is very significant. And they'll be, you know, earning the ranking points from their last round completed. And there will be a very, very significant financial penalty. And we're just dotting the I and T on that one.
Is it on the table that they not be permitted to play the following year?
That is not on the table.
What happens to a, I mean, you know, you hope that the answer is zero and it's not a relevant question, but if a player does test positive, mm-hmm. what happens after that?
We've had the experience of one positive test, and how it works is I turn my phone on in the morning. It's I take a deep breath, and the first few days it was going well, and then yesterday I turned it on. So I get an alert, and then that alert it triggers the communication process. So then I call the doctor, and we called the doctor, and we HIPAA laws a group that is permitted to know, and then the isolation process began. So immediately, who is that person? What room are they in? Are they sharing a room? And then our doctor in full PPE gear went to the room to inform the person pretty shortly thereafter. So they then, one player was taken out, or the one person was taken out, and the other person that was sharing the room was moved to a quarantine room. Because the difference, if you're infected, infection equals a minimum of 10 days of isolation. The other one, negative, but they could have been exposed, especially in these tight quarters. And then CDC guidelines, it's quarantine for 14 days. Because again, it may take some time for the virus to be manifesting itself.
Right. Will players get, you know, so if I were to lose, pick a round, you know, I lose in the second round, do I need to get tested again before I depart the hotel and fly to Europe?
So we're going to help the athletes and their guests return to Europe vis-a-vis their testing. It's going to really depend, John, on which country they're going to. Each country has, maybe a different protocol around the testing. what we do know is that, you know, the ATP is working with the Austrian government for Kitzbühel. The Italian Open has worked with their government. The French are working with their government. They're all going through the exact same thing that we went through with our federal government. Professional athletes and their guest support team have an exemption to come into the country, and that their 14 days of quarantine is waived because they're really going into an environment. And then we are seeing that countries are wanting either 48 hour or 72 hour PCR test prior to them entering. So we'll help them with that.
To what extent do you think you benefit from there being, you know, a few other pro tennis events that have come off already? And also, I don't know if you've picked up some best practices watching, you mentioned the NBA, baseball's obviously had a rougher go of it. What have you learned, good and bad, from the other tennis events and the other sports that are going on?
From the WTA events that have happened, I think players that experienced it can get a level of comfort, and that this is how it's going to be. So that, I think, was helpful. And, you know, even other tennis events that have happened, I think what I can tell you, and I think it's a tribute to the athletes and to their guests and the tours and us, we've learned a lot over the summer.
Like what?
And the fact that the virus is serious and they should isolate before they come in. Many were tested before they arrived. And the key to this whole thing is testing and the frequency of testing, masking, distancing. And if we all do that, and we continue to do that, we can return to work we can return to life, but you you know, you need to be mindful of it. And
so what, I mean, I don't, ultimately, what keeps you up at night? I mean, what's the biggest overarching concern here?
I think for me, until the last ball is hit, will be the mitigation of risk with COVID. It's a silent enemy, an invisible enemy, and we can't let up. You know, we can't let up on the masking. We can't let up on getting them to distance, and people will get comfortable. We should never be comfortable, and that is really the number one thing that'll keep me up.
I mean, apart from the virology comfortable, what gives you grounds to be comfortable? Sort of, I guess ethically, I guess would be the word. I mean, what? I mean, something clearly clicked where people said, you know what, we're okay, morally, ethically doing this. What was it for you that sort of makes you comfortable?
Ultimately, it's the medical specialists that they were more than comfortable that our testing protocols and the operating plan to mitigate risk, that this was you know, a plan that's probably safer than going to the grocery store. And with the economy opening in New York, and it's in phase four, which is the final phase of opening that includes professional sport, the way in which New York State and all of the healthcare professionals and the government officials, including the governor, it's now ironic after 6 months and everyone sort of questioning, are you serious? You're going to play this in New York? Why not in a sunny state? Why not in Indian Wells? And New Yorkers get all the tribute that we are here actually going to play the Western Southern Open and the U.S. Open.
I think it's hard perhaps for you to message, but I'm happy to do some lifting here. I mean, you know, my gym is opening next week. I mean, New York is really, people I think overseas see these rates and they're appalling, but the rates where you and I are very different from if you'd chosen to do this in Orlando or Indian Wells. Let me give you a catch-all to close on, which is, you know, we've gone through 20 FAQs. I mean, what else do you want people to know? What are misconceptions you want to clear up? This is not your traditional pre-tournament set of circumstances. What else do you want people to know?
I want them to know that the players are feeling safe and comfortable, and they're genuinely excited to return to play. And I would say, John, there's a sense of community here. I think they all are buying into. They've missed tennis. Now they're here. They've really wanted to play and compete, and we're all in this together. If we all, you know, wear the mask and keep our distance, our sport can return. And, you know, I think there'll be a lot of pride for all of us, everyone involved, you know, the collaboration with the tours, the governments. This is the largest international sporting event to return to play, to competition since the global shutdown. And the dimensions, it will for other international events and for other tennis tournaments. This will provide confidence and some clear guidelines to help our sport because of the nature of our sport. We need to go from bubble to bubble. And a little more difficult with the travel, but traveling is safe. And they just have to stick with their exposure group and forego going out to restaurants and bars. And that's the key to this whole thing.
Too naive and tidy to suggest maybe the sport can collaborate better than we sometimes think it can.
You know, that could be a silver lining from this pandemic. And it has brought the entire, you know, whether it be the Grand Slams, making adjustments to the rules so that we can help players and do this event. The tours, you know, weekly, daily calls with ATP and WTA and their leadership. And there's no way this would be happening had it not been for our sport to collaborate.
Speaking of which, I appreciate this. I hope, you know, next time we do one of these, there will not be like Lexington. I don't know if you see the cement mixers behind me, and you're in the locker room with a mask, and we're getting Zoom on FaceTime.
I know.
We all sort of want some normal, but I commend you for getting this far and knocking on the faux wood panel of my car and exactly. I wish you well and thanks for taking the time now.
Thank you, John. Just send positive karma and I know you'll be doing a great job with your viewers watching, and our sport is back. The U.S. Open is open, so away we go.
Exactly, away we go. All right, I appreciate it, and best of luck these next few weeks.
Okay, thanks, John.
Thanks, Stacey. Take care.
Cheers.
All right, thanks to Stacey for spending the time and going through that list of questions. Hopefully that will give some sense of what this event is going to look like when tennis balls are not in play. Again, we barely needs to be said, but this is a major event like no other. And credit to the USTA for staging this and getting this thing up and running and making the necessary adjustments and modifications. Here's knocking on wood that it holds and everyone stays safe. So thanks to Stacey. Thanks as always to Jamie Lasanti, our super fantastic producer. We'll have another podcast in 7 days. Subscribe, leave a review, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Keep the guest suggestions coming, and have a good week, everyone. Stay safe out there.